In today's episode of Grenadier Works, three people climb up a rope, a Toyota breaks down, and we discuss the hard way home.
How's life been treating you, buddy?
Oh man, life's been treating me tough. As an educator, I have less than 2 weeks left before I return to school.
Oh, hang on a minute, but that's the best time of year for parents.
It's all relative. It's all relative. It's great for you, not so great for me. I suppose that's the opposite of June. So yeah, it's been a little busy. Been a little busy at work. But today's episode is super packed. And unfortunately, it's going to sort of push some things aside, including a crazy story about my dad's finger. And then next episode, we're also going to kind of have some fun with car names, the good, the bad, and the ugly of what's out there.
Oh, there's some absolutely horrific ones, but that is for next time. Sadly, what you said is true, but hopefully we'll be making up for it with our guest today.
And it's super exciting that he's here. Our first effort, which we hope you all enjoyed, was really about the backstory of the Grenadier and sort of surrounded Sir Jim and how the vehicle came to life. And that's fantastic. But today we have someone who was among the first three normal people to get a butt in a Grenadier seat.
That's right. Initial deliveries, they happened several months ago at this point. But before then, there were three lucky individuals who won a truly extraordinary competition. That's right. This would be a delivery like no other. This would be the hard way home.
The premise was simple. Climb up a rope, drive your car home. But, and here's where it's a little tough, you start in Morocco and traverse the country before driving back to your home. So for two people, that was the United Kingdom. And for our guest tonight, his destination was Austria.
Conditions at that point in Morocco were significantly different from normal and very unanticipated. There was heavy snow, flooded rivers, and washed out tracks.
But this makes for a great story. Would our intrepid team make it? Well, ultimately, yes, they would. But would they enjoy it? That's the real question.
So to find out this and more, there was only one place to go. I'd like to introduce today's guest.
Ingemar.
Ingemar, welcome. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you as well.
Is Thor going to make an appearance today?
He's outside.
I love seeing him in the videos. he always looks like he can't be bothered.
He's super chill. Yeah. Here he is.
There he is.
Oh, that's a big lad.
Is he a Malamute or a Husky?
He's a Husky.
Oh, he's a Husky. He's a okay. Husky.
Yeah, he's a Husky.
Good looking dog. Obviously, we know potentially the Grenadier is your last vehicle or one of your last vehicles. But what's your car history? Where'd you start with? What was your first car? How did you get from your first car all the way up till today?
That's a very interesting story because I never really had a real off-road car. Of course, I started very young, 18, when I got my driver's license. I just needed a car, something cheap. And it was an old Opel Ascona. I had it for a year, and it was a Mazda 626, very, very old. So I think the first one was even manufacturing year 1979. So my birth date, 18 years old when I got it. After those two cars, the first time got a BMW. I worked as a bartender. I had a little money to spare. So I bought an old 7 Series at that time. And I liked the car, drove it for a few years. And a little bit before that, I was already in the military. And that's where I got into contact with off-road driving the first time, because I did my military license as well. And you might probably know it, in Austria, we use the G-Wagon in the military. We use the Pinzgauer. Once I drove those cars off-road, I got infected by the virus a bit. And then I had a job in Canada for 4 years. And there I got a Chevy Silverado, a truck. First time back to something off-roady, because I was based in Calgary, so close to the Rockies, spent a lot of time up in the Rocky Mountains, skiing there and everything. So that was the first one there. The second one was a Jeep, unfortunately only a Grand Cherokee, but still it never really left my mind that I wanted to have a real off-road car. I was always looking for a Defender, to be honest. always keep in mind that, but never really went for it because the Defender is not an everyday car. Not at least not for me, because I'm covering a lot of distances as well on the freeway, and that's, well, we all know it. It's not the most comfortable ride. That's why I refrain from getting one. So my journey went more towards first a little bit of sportier car, got a BMW again, a 6 Series convertible. That was 15 years ago, and I still have it. I still have it. It's my summer car.
Those things are great.
Yeah, yeah, I love them. But that's a fun car. After a while, I got something with more loading capability, which was an X5. Then during that time, I already went more into Defender, and then the Grenadier came up. So I already knew I will get that one. And as a vehicle for just a short period, I got a Mitsubishi L200. I had this only until my Grenadier arrived. One story in between, for 2 years I worked in Iceland. Actually, that's when I owned a Land Rover Discovery 1.
Oh my gosh, those were really, really nice. I love a Disco 1.
It was a V8, but it was, again, an old banger when I got it, nearly falling apart. But it was amazing to drive off-road there. Everything away from the ring road, the only tarmac road, everything away from that is really, really so exciting to drive around.
Was it the type where you've got the wheel arches cut away and you've got the massive balloon tires?
The typical Icelandic ones.
Yeah.
Bigger tires on it and everything. So it was really, you really need them. If you're going off the main roads with the water crossings and the deep snow and everything, you really need those kind of cars.
Sounds incredible.
And I will go back there with the Grenadier. That's definitely on my list.
So you were coming into getting your Grenadier, you know, with quite a lot of off-road driving. And that seems to be quite unusual, because looking at the forum and the conversations, a lot of people are buying this when they've never even driven off-road before. They've never necessarily had a four-wheel drive vehicle.
It's very interesting. I think that a lot of people were dreaming about an off-road car and never really did it. They were dreaming about getting a Defender once or at a certain point in their life. And maybe they had the same thoughts like I did, that it's not an everyday drivable car. So it's your second or third car. Maybe that's why they didn't get it. Once the Grenadier came out and you could see that it's probably not so bad on the road either, maybe that was the point when they decided to get one.
I think you're probably really on the money there. I mean, just from a personal point of view, I've got a couple of kids and I would love a Defender. I came close to getting a Tomb Raider version, which I've been mocked for many, many times. And I regret not getting it. It was the 130, it was the double cab pickup. Mm-hmm. This particular car ended up being, it was won by a farmer. He won a competition and he didn't want it. It was a well-known car. It was in the magazines and all the rest of it. And I think it was like £18,000 or something he wanted. Yeah, I know.
Really?
I know. And I wish I'd bought it off him. I can't remember what I bought instead, but it wasn't that, sadly. But fast forward into today, and I wouldn't be able to use that. I have to do the school run. I have to go shopping.
Yeah.
And I don't have to, but I love just going out into the desert and exploring and stuff. And however nice they are to look at, they just do not fill those criteria for me. And I'm sure Krabby's the same. You've gone through your iterations of Land Rovers, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the Defender availability in America is quite different than it is abroad. We only had them imported here for several years in the mid 90s. So attainment of one was pretty limited unless you were going to spend a fortune. And we see recently companies like, ECD? And I just saw one, there's one in Brooklyn. Yeah, they're rebuilding and reselling Defenders for six figures. So the thought of a Grenadier, which checks a lot more boxes for less money than that, is what excited me.
Yeah, same here. It's when I looked at the prices of the Defenders recently, in the recent years, going through the roof, and then the Grenadier came out, it wasn't so far off that number. But you had a new car, and you had everything in there, the three differential locks and so on. That's, again, it was a point where I said, no, of course I go for the Grenadier.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tell us, how did you first hear about the Grenadier? What was the thing? Was it just randomly looking on the internet, or was it you know, one of your friends or something?
It was really just randomly looking on the internet. Actually, I was looking for videos and information about nice customized Defenders. Somehow I came across this new car. I saw a picture and then, okay, what's that? And then I started digging into the topic, this project. Yeah, I kept an eye on it. And the more I heard about it, the more I got excited. Of course, for me, it was really nice to see the different components they used, who was developing the car. Magna Steyr in Austria is well known to someone from Austria, of course. There was already something that then, of course, got my attention. And then I heard they were using a BMW engine with a ZF transmission. Got really excited and the confidence grew. And if Magna Steyr is involved, it's probably really, really good off-road. So the only thing I was a bit unsure about was the on-road capabilities. I have to figure that out. The design of the car is, of course, a big plus for me as well. I like this old boxy, a little bit of mixture between G-Wagon, Defender, really.
So with regards to the design, I mean, Krabby's got one idea, I have another. He's firmly, it looks like a Defender, and I'm absolutely, no way, man, I think it's G-Wagon. Come on, you can be the tiebreaker here.
Does the second part more Defender, the first part more G-Wagon to me?
I have likened it to, it's the offspring of a Defender and a G-Wagon, where it got some, you know, some attributes from mom, some attributes from dad, and it turned out pretty good looking.
And depends on from which angle you look at it and which component, and it's either the one side or the other, or the best of both.
Yeah, I think, you know, Toby and Magna came in and basically just put a design together that really worked. It's the form and function.
One specific item is, of course, one I really, really love, which is the overhead panel. So all the switches on the roof, I think that was the last part that sold it for me, coming from being a pilot. It felt like home.
You heard about the Grenadier. You ran into it online. You researched it. You liked it. Now, I was a latecomer to the game, so I had never heard of the Hard Way Home. So how did you find out about that? How did you know you won? Tell us a little bit what went into the application and selection process.
So it was basically by invitation for the first few. The reason behind was they had to produce the cars in time. Then you had to send in a letter of motivation why you are the right person for the Grenadier. Then out of those 3,000, 1,000 sent in an application, and they condensed it down to 100, then to 10, and eventually to 6 people based on this letter of motivation. Of course, first I didn't think I have a chance. It was a very, very exciting project, but I thought, yeah, well, there's probably so many people out there with way better stories than mine, or way better letter of motivations than mine. In fact, I wrote mine in a bar, but it turned out to be quite okay at the end.
Now tell me, did you write it on the back of the bill?
Yeah, nearly. No, it was I had a piece of paper, a normal one, but that would be actually, I should have said it well on a napkin.
Yeah.
And then did they call you?
I got an email, and then they called me that they would like to invite me to an assessment day. I wasn't sure how many people would be there, so I still thought there's probably, I don't know, 100 people, and then they will still, you know, narrow it down further. But in fact, it turned out of those 6, 3 would win. I didn't know that before either. So of course, then you start calculating, then you start thinking, okay, well, I might be one of them. That's when I started to get nervous a bit. And then we had the chance to drive the Grenadier for the first time.
So let me just get this clear. You've already said, I want one. You've paid your money. And this is the first time, by winning a competition or almost winning a competition, you actually get inside the car and sit there.
Yes. It was amazing.
Wow. That
was really nice to see then and drive it around.
Was your driving ability part of the selection process? Like for the 6 of you, was that like taken into account?
Not at all. It was not the ability. They just wanted to film us. They just wanted to produce a video and give us the opportunity to try it out on different obstacles. We had a pro driver next to us who was talking us through 30 people from Ineos who they built this camp for us somewhere very remote because no one should see the cars driving around. It was really, really a nice atmosphere there. Technicians were there, engineers were there. So it was really a really great day. And of course, driving the car around was just so much fun.
I was just going to say, was Jim there?
No, we haven't met him yet.
Wow.
But this day at Milton Keynes, then they produced short videos about each candidate afterwards. It was a 1 minute feature for each of the six candidates. And then they put that online on YouTube and their own homepage. And then people had the chance to vote.
Wow, that must have been nerve-wracking because it's totally out of your control. If it's somebody, let's say that the PR team at Ineos saying, oh, this is our guy. But when it's the public, that's difficult, man.
It was the public. It was the public. It was really the public. The decision was done by people online voting for a different person. And they, at the end, they told me the numbers as well, who got how many votes. And it was a real process and was very exciting. And of course, then you think about everything you say, what you wear on the video and everything, because every little thing might count at the end. You have to be able to be kind of likable within this 1 minute video. It was something, of course, I thought of and had to think about.
Did you get the most votes?
No, I did not.
Did Gemma?
Yes.
Yeah.
But honestly, when I did my calculation for myself, I said, okay, well, Gemma is in, and it's about the two remaining spots. I have to fight for one of those.
So did you get silver or bronze in the race?
It was silver.
Didn't matter. Win, place, or show, you were there.
Even if I was number fourth in the ranking and I wouldn't go, of course, would have been a bit disappointed. But just the opportunity to be there in Milton Keynes was already amazing. But of course, then winning it was, well, unreal. They called me and I'm glad to tell you, you're in.
Wow.
I mean, you just think about how they decided upon the name. Again, that went out to a public vote. So it generally seems a theme that they're really trying to get their supporters directly involved in how the company makes some decisions. That's very unusual and it's really cool to see.
I think so as well. It was very, very different to every other manufacturer. Everybody else is disguising their prototypes and hiding them from the public. And they were driving out in open roads, showing the prototypes to 4x4 experts, to normal off-road enthusiasts, that they really took those inputs serious and they changed things. So they were really listening. And I think that's very unique that future customers got involved in this process so early.
Yeah, that's just so refreshing to hear.
So you're selected, they call you. At that point, had you already spec'd out your truck? Or was it afterwards that you said how you wanted it spec'd out?
My order was already finished. All the specifications, everything was already done. I changed one thing from learning that I won until the Hardway Home really took place. I changed the side steps to the rock sliders.
I'm glad you didn't say something like the camp table.
I was thinking that, like, let's say you had spec'd a Fieldmaster petrol, 18-inch alloys with stock tires, no lockers, no winch. If they would have been okay with you taking that on this trip, obviously, though, yours was kitted out pretty well.
Mine was the most complete of the three cars because mine was the only one with front and rear differential locks. And Gemma and Zahid, they opted without those. As far as I know, Zahid went for the alloy wheels, but down from Morocco, they gave him steel rims. You saw the video. It was good because he blew a tire down there and they had to actually hammer it back into shape.
Yeah, I saw that. Was that the only breakdown or failure that you guys had, or were there some more?
Well, it was one breakdown of a car, but it was one of the support vehicles, which was a Land Cruiser.
Oh, no. I hope you used the winch to tow him out of the snow.
The whole group was 15 cars in total, 8 Land Cruisers and 7 Grenadiers.
It's interesting they didn't bring any Land Rovers with them.
Yeah. Which, were they 70 series Land Cruisers?
I think not even Prados, the newer ones.
Oh, okay.
They had to change the tires on those. And one of the Grenadiers was the lead vehicle where the whole team leader was driving. That's car number one. And then we had the three customer cars. We had three spare, which had the same colors like ours. And I know a lot of the people who saw the Hardware Home video, they were pointing out that there's five or six different license plates in the videos. Yeah, and of course, it was because we had those dual cars. And when we were running through something and they couldn't get a perfect shot, the cars behind were filmed as well. So we didn't have to go back and do it again. And we could just drive and enjoy the drive and don't have to go back if they couldn't get a perfect shot.
Yeah, that makes sense, because people are saying, hey, we don't think this is Ingemar's real car because the license plate's not correct and all the rest of it. So when you guys were climbing up that rope, the vehicle that you saw at the top of the hill, that was your vehicle that you'd spec'd and you'd bought, correct?
That was exactly to my configuration, exactly how I ordered it. So it was really, really exciting. It was the first time, of course, I saw it. And it was very, very exciting to get it in such a location. It was unreal. It's hard to tell how I felt climbing up this rope, and that's where the cars were. Yeah, it was really a very, very special moment.
Yeah. I must admit, I don't think I've ever heard of a car delivery quite like that. You're one of three very lucky people.
Absolutely. With the delays in the deliveries, it turned out that then we were first three customers in the world having their own cars. Because normally it would have been at a later stage. We wouldn't have been the very first ones. But because of the delays, it turned out that we were super, super lucky to, you know, sit in your own car, drive through Morocco first, through the Atlas Mountains, and then drive all the way back to Austria, in my case, through half of Europe, and then park the car here in my driveway, and then no one else has one. I compare it sometimes with the Defender. Imagine driving one of the first Defenders. Mind-blowing.
Yeah, we know a guy that has one, but he's got the very first one.
So as you said, it was a 15-vehicle convoy.
Yeah.
Was it sort of like back in the Camel Trophy days, there was a medical car, sort of like a rolling mechanical shop, press camera car? Like, they're all different?
Yeah, we had the support team covered basically everything. We had security guy, a team that was figuring out the routing and took the decisions for the whole team and for safety. We had a team of mechanics. They took care of the car every night. They just checked them through and made sure that everything is fine. And they were there to repair the cars if necessary. Well, we had it with the blown tires. That's when they stepped in. And of course, we had a trained paramedic with us as well. And a couple of guys from marketing, plus, of course, the film team.
Yeah,
of course. They had to be there as well.
Tell me, was it the mechanic's Prado that broke down?
I think it was the car of our local guy. We had a local guy as well.
Oh, no. Oh, man, he's meant to get the good one.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
And he was out of reach with our radios when it happened. He was just ahead of us, and he couldn't reach us by the radio. And then, well, after a while, we figured out that he's missing, and then they found him.
Very cool. So we know that the tire situation, that happened. Any other parts have to be replaced because of damage or failure?
No. No, not with other cars. During the preparation, they actually broke one of the side steps because they went off-road and hit a big rock, which again, yeah, reassured me my decision to go for the rock sliders instead. The two tires, that incident before was the only thing that happened down there. The cars worked well. Well, we know the known issues with these nuisance warnings. But beside that, mechanically, everything worked perfectly fine. The car felt good. It felt reassuring. And especially now after 15,000 kilometers, I can really say it's a very reliable car.
That's really nice to hear, because just reading the online stuff, whether it's on the INEOS forum or on Facebook or Reddit and all the different groups, there were a lot of people that were saying, hey, this is a setup. These aren't real customers. You know, basically just saying it was a totally contrived event.
I paid for my car. It's my car that I took from down there back home. The only thing I won was this event, this special handover, and of course the trip through Morocco.
Tell me, did they give you a special patch to go on your Bellstaff jacket?
I don't have my Bellstaff jacket yet. I didn't get a coat yet. But now when I was at the Festival of Speed in the UK, they actually gave me another jacket which says Hardway Home.
Ah, that's something. That must be nice.
You'll have to send us a photo of that so we can include that so folks can see what that looks like, because there should only be three of them in the world.
Also with the t-shirts, don't open one of them, leave it in the plastic bag, and in 20 years, you'll be able to sell that for a fortune.
I should do that. I should do that. But then again, I have to wear it as well. I'm really bad in keeping those things in the original package. not the type.
That's how it should be, right?
It's the same with the car. I thought about, you know, getting a second one and put the one in the garage, the original one, but I can't. I have to drive it.
That's right. It's a vehicle of provenance now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. But I'm not giving it up. I'm not giving it away. I'm not selling it.
Don't be like me who turned down the Tomb Raider Land Rover.
It was a bad decision, I'd say.
Very.
So you're, let's see, you have around 15,000 kilometers on it right now. You know, once you got back from the trip, what services have been applied to the car? I assume oil changes at this point. You know, we haven't seen a lot of information from INEOS regarding service intervals. What has been done to your truck service-wise?
Actually, the first official service would be at 20,000 kilometers.
Really?
They were telling me come in at 20,000. I did check it up before with my dealer, and so we just assessed the situation of the car, and I wanted to apply some protection to the underbody of the car, because I still have the sand and dirt from a rock on there. Well, I didn't wash it for the first 15,000 kilometers, never. It was always dirty. And he cleaned the car completely. And I got a new set of tires. That was part of the deal, that after this trip, there will be a little refurbishment of the car. That's what we did so far. But as I said, the official service would have been at 20,000.
I didn't realize that.
I was surprised as well. I have to admit, it looks really good if it's clean as well. Clean and dirty looks amazing both ways.
That's exactly what people want to hear, right?
And I think everybody, yeah, wants to look out their window and see a vehicle that makes them smile. I mean, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And it really does. It really does. And not only does it make me smile, also other people who like off-road cars. The looks you get when you drive around with the car, when you park somewhere, people approach you. Oh, is that the new Grenadier? I've never seen one in real. Some people say, oh, are you the guy from the video? So it's, I already get recognized. It's really funny.
So you're that guy?
Yeah.
There's one question that I'm burning to ask about the hard way home. You guys were able to take somebody as an invited guest, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we could take our plus ones with us. Initially, I thought I'd take my girlfriend with me, but then she gave away this present to one of my best friends. He's also into off-road. He's an adventurer as well. He was so excited about me winning the hard way home. And when they talked to each other, she figured out it's probably a nice idea to give him the place, to give him the spot on the car. And he was super happy about it, of course.
You were driving, and all I can imagine is all the time he's just there, like the bird on your shoulder going, Ingemar, you really made the right decision here. Man, this thing is great. I can't believe you bought one of these things.
Yeah. Funny thing, he owns a new Defender.
Oh,
yeah. Really?
he just couldn't wait until the Grenadier is ready. That's probably the reason why he owns the Defender, the new one. He likes his car, especially for his purpose, for his needs. You know, when we were driving, when we started driving, in the beginning, he sometimes mentioned, yeah, but in the Defender, this is like this, or in the Defender, this is like that. But it got less and less over the days. Eventually, he said, it's an amazing car. It's a great car. And you could see that he wouldn't say regret his decision, but he wanted to have a Grenadier as well.
He's going to have to wait now because the order books are pretty full, as I believe.
Yes, absolutely. He has to deal with his current car for a couple of years, and then he might get one of the Grenadiers.
Yeah, and if he wants to go into the second-hand market, which I have been saying for 2 years now, is going to be red hot.
Yeah, there's already a few people here in Europe trying to sell the Grenadier used. Well, it's brand new, selling it to make some money, and they are succeeding. They make a lot of money. They can sell it for 10, 15 more than the standard prices, which is crazy.
So that either means that you got a bargain for the price you paid, people are really, really desperate to jump the queue, or it's just genuinely worth what people are paying for it.
It's not cheap, the car, but I think for what you get, it's kind of okay. The whole package, it has already many things included. It's a really well thought through car. You can see with many small things that they're really, really nice solutions. And if you look into the off-road scene, 4x4 scene, everybody's customizing and modifying and spending a lot of money. At the end, even with a cheaper base car, you end at the same performance and also at the same price.
And without a factory-backed warranty.
Yeah, true. Exactly.
I love modifying cars and tinkering and doing all this stuff. I'm one of those people where I don't want to cut up the dashboard. I want it to look original.
Yeah.
And this is one of the few vehicles that it comes standard. I mean, yes, the Bronco in the States, you know, they've got Oxy switches and things pre-wired. But you do anything else and it always looks aftermarket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this, it's already there.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is really, really cool because I hate something that just looks shonky. That's just not my style.
And you don't have to drill holes in your roof and in your riding car to get a cable through and stuff like that. I just had a friend visiting with his Jeep Rubicon, and he said he brought the car brand new, but then he had to drill 12 holes into his roof to mount the roof rack. And it was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, you're insulated if you get a company to do it for you. But even so, you're like, I've got this new thing and I'm defacing it by putting a rack on.
You have to stay with this rack because you cannot, you know, you have the holes there already. You cannot put something else on it because if something changes, if you find out, well, that's not the perfect roof rack for me, I want to have something different or my needs change. Well, with the gutter, I can just unscrew it, take it off and put a new one on.
Absolutely. I'm so happy that they went down that route. I mean, the person that sat there and said, look, don't just do a fully seamed roof line, put a gutter on it. Please, please put a gutter. So whoever that was, let us know and we will send you a t-shirt.
Yeah, I like it as well. I built my own roof rack, as you might have heard, as you might have seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I couldn't find any roof rack out there which takes these Sapphire windows into account, but I still wanted to have a full one. So I could put something on top in the front as well if I don't necessarily need the Sapphire windows, but I still, if I don't have anything on my roof, I still want to be able to open them, take them out, and so on. So yeah, we could figure something out and we're experimenting and just checking what's the best solution. We had more possibilities for us. I'm going also on our side panels. We'll install them tomorrow on the car.
On the utility belt, correct?
Yes, exactly. The lower point is the utility belt, and on top we go on the gutter.
Ah, that's interesting. That's something that's really good. So not to go back to Land Rover, but the things that they've developed from the new Defender, they sort of look like motorcycle panniers, right?
Yeah.
And I think they're not very efficient. There's a lot of box for a little volume.
Absolutely.
That's how I see it.
I went back and rewatched a lot of your YouTube videos. And, you know, you did in some of them point out some things like, you know, you weren't necessarily crazy about the door sill protectors and like the size of the rear view camera on the screen. Have you identified some other things over all these 15,000 kilometers that you would like to see INEOS tweak before the next version, so to speak?
Honestly, it's really, really small things. Something nice they could come up with would be an inverter. So you have a higher voltage. The good thing is on the Model 24, that one will be available. I talked to the engineers already. They are working on that. I'm not sure if there's a retrofit for the early ones, but we'll see. Right now, I'm running everything with 12 volt, works as well. But that might be something that makes the car even more complete. Besides that, I think I mentioned it already in my videos as well, the time the display needs to adapt to the different lighting conditions. Some people talk about the quality of the lever for the hood and the lever for the rear door.
Right.
It feels not as rigid as the rest of the car. But honestly, I thought about it for a long time because I also have to say something negative in the videos as well. It's really, so far, it hasn't been easy to find something that I didn't like about the car.
Good.
Well, that's really nice to hear. And it's not as if you've only done 1,000 miles or, 1,600 Ks. You're about a year's worth of driving for a normal vehicle at this point.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It is already. And there's quite a few more kilometers coming.
Yeah, so perfect time to segue to that. What? Tell us about your next adventure. You said in about a month you have an adventure beginning. What can you share with us?
Yeah, so at the mid-end September, we're going to start on a trip to the North Cape. So from here, from Austria, all the way up Scandinavia, Norway, all the way to the most northern point in Europe.
Oh, that's going to be great.
The routing is not completely set up yet. Probably initially we go up more along the coastline of Norway, with all the fjords up to the Lofoten Islands and so on. And on the way down, we probably go more inland, maybe into Finland, then cross the Baltic Sea into the Baltics, and then we're back down south and through Poland and the Czech Republic back down to Austria. So that's That's happening mid-September, roughly.
That's going to be a fabulous trip. You have to promise that you're going to come back and we can talk about that trip and how it all went at some later date.
Absolutely. I would love to. I would love to come back and talk about that.
When you say we are taking a trip, you, your girlfriend, and Thor, is it just one car?
One car and the three of us, yeah. Thor is definitely going with us, and he plays a big role in how I set up the car. My concept is that we use the rooftop tent for us, and Thor is sleeping in the car. Yeah, I had to shove around a few things, but I think I came up with a pretty good solution, and I hope it will work.
You're going to have to be careful, otherwise you'll wake up one morning and he'll have just eaten breakfast. He'll have gone straight through, he'll gone through the larder. There'll be no more sausages or bacon left.
Yeah. But the good thing is he loves sleeping in the crate. If the car is parked outside with the cargo space open, he jumps in and sleeps in there.
So your dog's name is Thor. Your truck's name is Loki. Tell us about your Nordic connection.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, my name is Nordic. Ingemar
right.
is a Scandinavian name as well. But I have no connection to Sweden or Scandinavia whatsoever, except my name, because it comes from Norse mythology as well. The name Ingemar, Thor, Loki, it all makes sense to me. I love the cold. That's another thing. If I choose between beach or glacier, I go for the glacier. It's something I really, really like. And of course, when we go to Norway with Thor and Loki, we're going to visit Jotunheim, which is, in the Norse mythology, home of Thor and Loki.
Perfect. Yeah. That sounds like your Christmas card photo.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we should produce one there.
Yeah.
So the trip that you're planning to the Northern Cape, is that going to be a mixture of on and off-road?
As much off-road as possible, let's put it that way. I checked out a couple of trails. There is this so-called Trans-Euro Trail. You can download the GPS tracks and everything, which is normally for enduro bikes. Most of the tracks you can drive in an off-road car as well. And I definitely want to build those into my routing. That's why we rather spend more time driving just to see those roads. Use the car the way it's supposed to be used.
With the planning for the trip up to the North Cape, are you putting together a spare parts list for the vehicle that you think you're going to need to take?
I try to put something together, but well, there's no experience what's going to break. That's the problem. I'm talking with my dealer. He's an 4x4 expert as well, dealing with G-Wagons and all that kind of stuff. So they have a lot of experience, and so I want to check with them. Plus, I have a contact at Ineos itself still, and I want to ask those for advice. And I will share on one of my videos, on one of my next videos. So, and then, of course, after the trip, see what did I need of those parts. But it's difficult because no one has experience. If you go look around what people take on the long trips with a Defender, you're getting a very specific list.
Well, if it's an old Defender, then you take a lot of fluids because they gradually leak out on your journey.
Yeah.
No, that would come in handy on the trip because then you would just follow the trail home. It's like breadcrumbs for Hansel and Gretel.
You never get lost.
It's got the breadcrumb function built into the nav. Come on.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a 21st century version of an oil leak.
Yeah.
Okay, so there we have it. If you're waiting for your Grenadier and you want to get your fix, then go and look at Ingemar's channel. Ingemar, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate the time and effort that you put into answering some of our interesting questions and some of our not so interesting questions. And I hope that anybody that listens to this will actually enjoy the conversation that we've had. It's been really good.
So we know that your YouTube channel is Grenadier_exploring. Elsewhere in social media, where can people find you?
I'm also on Instagram with exactly the same name. It's also Grenadier_exploring. Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me, for having me here at your show, at your podcast. And it was great to talk to you. Thank you very
much. Yes. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Next time on the Grenadier Works podcast, we discuss the newly announced US dealers. We finally work out where Krabby's dad's finger actually points to, and we poke fun at some monumentally bad car names. This is Grenadier Works with Krabby and Stu. I'll do.
Yeah.
Thank you.